Don't do that. Okay. Hello, and welcome to the Voice of Reason podcast. I am Benjamin Boyce, and today's guest is Buck Angel, who is an absolute powerhouse. This is probably one of my favorite interviews that I've done in, like, all of the interviews. Such a beautiful, powerful spirit. Buck Angel is a trans man, so born a female, and underwent surgery and hormone therapy to achieve the identity of a man. And he did that in the 90s and was ahead of this current wave of trans community and stuff. So we talk about that. We talk about his experience growing up, the dysphoria, and what transition meant and did for and to him. And we also talk a lot about the current state of discourse around transsexualism, transgenderism, and the medical community, and what is happening to young people who are getting on the transition track. Very great interview. So let's just dive in. Here's Buck Angel.
Hi, friend.
Good day to you.
How are you? You have such an awesome voice. I'm so jealous.
I have a lot of equipment. It's helping me.
Right on.
What are you up to today?
Or this week, God, I guess. It's been, COVID. It's just insane. And I have an 8-year-old, and it's just so no school. I have to homeschool and have to keep him busy. It's so insane, my friend. And also just, being locked up on some level is a little mentally draining, I think. And dealing with the world now and dealing with the trans community is like, I have no words, dude. I'm just like, this happening?
Oh, geez. Yeah, are you in a densely packed area, or do you have some land around you that you guys can wander on?
Oh, yeah. So I live like smack dab in the middle of Hollywood, California. Okay. So really, I am by the mountains, luckily, so I can actually walk literally half a mile up the road. I'm in a mountain area, but I'm in the city. I'm like seriously city living. You don't live in the city, do you?
No, I'm surrounded by the forest, basically.
Right on. Yeah. Excellent. That's why you have such an excellent energy. You're with nature, my friend.
Yeah. I'm pretty online, but when I'm not online, I'm very not online.
Right on.
Well, I don't know what you want to accomplish with this discussion. I usually like to root everything in biography. I don't know if you're tired of talking about your life, but that's kind of where I like to begin things, and then we can talk about how that informs your views on what's going on, specifically with the transgenderism, transsexualism, and how that's unfolded over the years. When did you first transition, or when did you?
So, I'm an old guy. I'm 58, actually, at 58 years old, and I transitioned 25 years ago. So, a long time ago.
Mid-90s.
And here in Los Angeles, and no, I was literally an experiment, like 100% an experiment. Neither of my doctors had ever worked with a transsexual man. The first one, my hormone doctor, my endocrinologist, only worked with transgender women. So for 30 years, he had a practice for trans. So I was his first transsexual man. And he was like, he goes to me, I'm not really sure how to do this.
Oh, wow.
And he said, you're going to be my guinea pig. He actually said that.
Okay. And what was your feeling towards that specifically, like being on the cutting edge?
Scared to death. But, honestly, it was either that or death. So, I had already attempted suicide twice. I was a raging alcoholic drug addict. I was on death's, doorstep for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Would you mind outlining your experience of gender dysphoria, like from your childhood on, if gender dysphoria is the proper term?
Of course it is. Yeah. And I also want to let you know that you don't offend me ever. I'm not from that camp. You cannot, as a trans guy, man, you got to grow some balls in this world in order to get to where I'm at. I would never be here if I didn't grow balls. And I'm the guy who makes fun of it's upsetting me because I just have gotten to this place because I meet you all in the middle. You know what I mean? I don't force you to think about me. But that said, I just want you to know you can't offend me. I'm not from that camp. So, it was a difficult space for me growing up as a kid and feeling like a dude. In the 60s, I was born in 1962 in Los Angeles in the Valley. And, my parents are amazing. They of all the things they had to deal with in the 60s, they just were okay with me being Buck, and they literally on some level raised me as Buck, and you know, things didn't really, I did not have a bad childhood. I had a, you know, an awesome childhood. Even the boys played with me on the block. Everyone just considered me a boy, right? A tomboy. It was just very normal. It wasn't, you know, I got in fights at school, and I had, you know, hard times. Sometimes people would call me a girl, and but you know, I'm going to tell you now, as an elder, as an older person, I can tell you that that did make me a stronger person. And so I do think sometimes these kinds of things are important for kids to deal with and have sort of these places that you have to push through, because you learn from pushing through and you learn from resistance. And so, you know, I didn't get to transition as a kid, and it wasn't even on the table. That wasn't even, you know, mostly everyone just thought I'd grow out of it, and you know, yeah. and I didn't grow out of it. I grew into it on some level. But so what happened was puberty. And I can pretty much tell you, everyone who's going to listen to this is going to have that connection with me. Everyone goes through puberty. That's a human space. And so, but for a person like me, and even for a person like you, it was uncomfortable to go through puberty, but mine took a next level, right? Yeah. So imagine if you started growing boobs, and you know, you would be like totally freaked out. Like, I'm turning into a lady and I think I'm a man. That messed with my brain. And so that's when alcohol came into the picture, you know, cutting. I was a cutter. I used to take razor blades and cut my face, my arms, everything, you know, and hide that from my parents. And I just was in a really spin, a downward spiral. And I didn't pop out of it until my late 20s, 30s, until I started getting therapy and really taking. But pretty much from the time of 16 all the way into my 20s, I was an alcoholic drug addict running around the world acting like an insane person, you know. Okay. But I have a story, man. It's insane. Yeah. And here I stand today because I got to be the person I always wanted to be. And 100% I have gender dysphoria, but today I don't. No longer have gender dysphoria. I actually fixed the problem.
Could you explain that gender dysphoria, like your feeling towards your body, and maybe outline that for young women who are experiencing that too, and kind of describe the severity of that?
You know, puberty. I'm going to come back to puberty. All these young people are going through puberty right now, but they have the internet, right? I didn't have that. So for me, it was a total disconnect. 100% disconnect, because all this time I was like living as a boy, and then all of a sudden, just what is happening? Boobs start growing, you start to feel different. Yeah. Boys start to feel that difference from you too, and the boys started moving away from me.
Okay.
And that's why I'm telling you, biology is real. I mean, I don't need to tell you, but it's real. I know, I lived it. I watched the boys move away from me. I watched how, like, I'm supposed to act this way, they're supposed to act that way, and it's actually a feeling inside. And I know that the boys started to see me as a girl, and that really was very detrimental and for my mental health as well, because I didn't feel connected to the girls, and so I became a lonely child on some level. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. By not being connected to the girls, does that encapsulate your attraction to women or your attraction to men?
So again, that's a whole other space. You know, our sexual space is not the same as our gendered space. And so for me, I always was attracted to girls. Even at that age, when I started going through puberty, I was totally attracted to women. I didn't even think about guys that way. I was always thinking about girls. So on some level, I was a straight kid, you know, and I was just looking at girls I felt like a boy looking at a girl. But that was a whole other level, because then I was like, really a lesbian, right?
Yeah.
So it's getting piled on top. So I really was a lesbian on some level. I really was attracted to girls, but I felt like a boy. Now, here's the situation today. All of these young girls are, I'm trans. What does that even mean? I never said I was trans. I didn't have that language. It's a language that's being given to them to say they are something, where I just felt this way from the get. Now, I'm not going to tell you, I'm not a doctor, I'm not anything. I only have my own experience to say the things that I say here. And that said, it's my opinion that we are on some level indoctrinating when you put language that people can take and say, of course, everyone feels some way when they're growing up, or some different. Gender is a real thing that happens to kids, and sexuality. And so, yeah, when you give kids this language, oh, I'm trans, they're immediately going to grab onto that, and that's what they think they're going to be, when they might necessarily not be that.
Yeah, yeah. So I just think it's kind of interesting that you say you were disconnected from women, but you were also attracted to them.
Yeah.
It's always kind of an interesting aspect of desire that we desire what we're different from in a way.
Yes, in a way, I think so. And honestly, I just felt like a boy. And my thought vision, which I saw, was a man is with a woman. So I didn't even know about homosexuality so much back in the 60s and 70s, right? We didn't really talk about it. That was like off the table. Can you imagine being trans? Gay was off the table. Trans is like, what is this? Yeah.
And with regards to you being unique to your doctors, did you have a community that kind of understood your position within the trans community? Or
there was no trans community.
Okay, so you didn't have access to trans women or...
No. No, I mean, so the access I had was my trans women friends who I met in party streets. That was the trans women were always around, but they sort of molded into the drag queen culture and the gay culture. Okay. And so there was back and forth of that, but I knew trans women, but it wasn't something that I connected in my brain, if that makes sense. I didn't realize I could also do that because none of my therapists, anybody I went to, everyone just said I was a very male identified female. Now, the reason I don't necessarily like to tell that story is because today we're in this idea that you can't be a gay, girl at 16 and like you must be trans. So that was happening to me back in that day. They were saying the opposite. They were saying, you're not really a boy, you're a gay woman. Where that wasn't, had nothing to do with my sexuality, it had 100% to do with my gender, but we didn't have the tools back in the day. But I do see us talking more about kids being, or youngsters or 16, 17 year olds being trans as opposed to being gay. And I don't see the gay on the table anymore. I don't see us talking about maybe they're a gay woman, which they possibly could be. And that's upsetting to me that we've literally taken the homosexual language off the table. And now everything is about trans, and that's just not true.
Yeah. So what steps did you take internally to kind of get out of that disassociation you were using alcohol with? Like, what was the steps of you figuring that out and confronting yourself and figuring out how to integrate yourself?
Very difficult. I became homeless. So I basically was a fashion model, and I traveled Europe as a model, and I was like one of the very first androgynous female models at that time. And so I couldn't handle it though. And I was having opportunities. They were like literally wanted to make me into a huge like supermodel. And here I am like, I actually hate this. Where's the cocaine?
Oh, okay.
Where's the alcohol? Like they're feeding you. And I'm like, okay, I'll do anything you want. But so I was literally female fashion model, but I literally couldn't handle it. They ended up sending me back to the States and I had nowhere to go. My family had disowned me. Everyone disowned me. I lived on the streets and I was smoking crack cocaine and I was a prostitute. Oh, yeah. And oh my God, it was insane. I got out of it because I almost got killed. And I just knew I literally looked to God and I said, I hope I'm going to die. And it was like, I knew I needed to get sober, and sobriety was my sort of awakening to know that I could, on some level, through a therapist, fix this problem.
Okay. And what, with regards to that therapy, what was kind of like the things that you had to figure out, like conceptually about who you are?
Right. So I already knew, I had told therapists forever that I don't feel like a girl, I feel like a boy, and they would shut it down. Shut it down. You're a gay woman. You're just very masculine. This therapist said to me, I believe you, Buck. And it was like, I could cry talking about it because she saved my life. And so, but we didn't have the tools back then. There was no internet. There was no place to go for information on how to do any of this stuff. So together we sort of figured it out. And I found a pamphlet in a bookstore that says Transgender Women Resource Guide. And I don't know why. I just picked it up and I looked inside. That's how I got my doctors. Okay. I called them. Yeah. And then they were willing to work with me even though I was their guinea pig.
Yeah. Okay. So how was that then, that the hormones and how did your brain shift? And
dude, like it's so crazy. You actually shift your thought process. I did. I have, and on some levels, I can tell you that emotionally, I'm less sensitive. And I don't, people can get upset at these things, but I need to remind people this is my story and what happened to me. Yeah. But I did feel a totally different level of the way I feel sensitively towards life or things, and I felt this sort of like thing come down on me where I felt more positive, and I felt more strength in my ability to walk the world. And, you know, I always wore a baseball cap when I was that way. And I always wore it down over my eyes. And the baseball cap come off, and my eyes opened, and I saw the world. And it was like, it was game-changing for me. And, you know, even after that one testosterone shot, which was about that much, it mentally shifted me, and I just knew I was on the right track. I don't know how, but I knew it.
Did you end up constructing an identity, or did it feel like you were kind of growing into yourself, if that's a fair question?
Yeah, it is a fair question. And so, no, I did start to structure my identity, because I always looked and saw men, very masculine men. As you see, I'm kind of hyper masculine. That was my idea of masculinity, Tom of Finland, like these very macho men. I just worshipped that. Worshipped it. And so that was really what I saw in my envision of my outside space, right? Because for me, it wasn't necessarily my brain that I felt I needed to work on. I felt like I needed to work on what you saw, which is this physical vision. And so I never even thought about my brain until later on in life. And I never thought, well, what does a man think like? What does a woman think? I never thought that. I thought, I need you, my friend, to see me like this. And that fixed so much for me.
That is a very salient point, because a lot of the extremity of certain aspects of trans rights activism is really heavily trying to force other people to see them in a certain way. And the most extreme part of that is the female penis. That's where we are right now. So how do we navigate that? When you're doing a deal or a trade deal, like navigating like that relationship with other people and the expectation of them to see you in a certain way, and finding your own space in that.
Right. So the question is, I'm sorry, I didn't.
How did you navigate the expectations of having other people change how they saw you?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Great question, my friend. Who's prepared for that? Especially somebody like me who doesn't even have what we have today, which is the internet talking, blah, blah, blah. I had none of it. I'm literally going into this blind. The thing that helped me on some level, it's going to sound insane, get to that thing, was I always had in the back of my mind, if this doesn't work, I'll kill myself. It was my mantra. It was literally my mantra after every shot, if this doesn't work. And then I started to get to this space where I was like, actually, I don't care, because I started to get facial hair and I started to look masculine and things started to. But in the beginning, people did not like it. The lesbian community that I was attached to literally disowned me. They were like, you're a freak. You're gross. This is disgusting. You're abandoning us. Okay. I'm jumping ship.
Interesting.
All of that. Yeah, no, they hated it back in the day. Nobody. Okay. Yeah,
because of you think the aversion to masculinity, perhaps.
Also, they felt like I was a traitor, because back in the day there was this sort of like push against men on some level, and I don't want to say lesbians aren't man haters. That's a total myth, but there is a thing there that
some
happens.
Tension,
and
for sure.
Tension, okay. Great word. Thank
you. This is in the 90s or the 80s we're talking about?
Yeah, the 90s. Yeah, in the 90s, totally. And they hated it. And when I started to transition, they freaked. The funny part of that story is, let's say fast forward 10 or so years later, a lot of those women came and asked me how to transition. Yeah, that was a very difficult space for me to be in, I'll be honest with you. I have, the two people on one side, one saying, don't tell them, fuck them. Oh, okay. The other side saying, you got to, dude. It's your space now.
Okay. And
yeah.
How do we maintain guardrails then from your point of view so that we catch, we prevent detransition and we prevent the unnecessary body modification for people who don't actually.
I know. It's such a shame. The detransitioners are really, I hate to say this, but they're going to actually be a part of creating a better space for transition. And on some level, I think they are guinea pigs. Okay. And it really upsets me and makes me want to cry because I just can't imagine that happening to me. I've never even thought, it's never even been that much of a thought on my mind. So I'm like, wait a minute, this is why me and you are connecting, and I'm connecting there because we need to have this conversation. So how do we stop this from happening? Well, we're talking about it. And I'm going to tell you, there's a part of, and I'm not going to say my community or that, there's a part of the trans community, a part of the trans community that does not want us to talk about this, does not want it to be seen, wants to hide it under the rug. And that's upsetting to me because I don't understand why we want to hide something that can actually help us be better in the future of transitioning for the future of us. So we don't let this happen to youngsters. Why is this happening today? Because kids are being indoctrinated into this thought process through the internet, through, yay, trans is fun and happy. I would never want anybody to be trans. That's the last thing I would want a child to have to deal with, or a parent, or anybody. It's a nightmare. It's not a game. This is so detransition on some level is going to help us, but at the same time, like, how do we stop these kids from taking such drastic measures, removing your breasts, seriously, because you at 16, because you think you're trans without any mental health care. Okay. I mean, wow, that in itself is actually so dangerous and irresponsible of our community.
Yeah. How do you think that the detransitioners will help transition?
So what we'll do is you, and it's horrible that I'm going to kind of say this, but I really think using them and listening to them and understanding why did they do this and all of a sudden what, because like I said, again, I've never had most of the guys like me, my friends, we've all done what I've done. And that's where we stand. We just wanted to be dudes. We went into the world. We had a sex change on some level. And so that's where we're at. So I've never had that. So I'm interested in this. Why would you ever look back if you actually made the right choice? It means you didn't make the right choice. And where in that space did you not make the right choice? Because I didn't. I made the right choice along the way. And so I look back at that and I say, I'm watching these detransitioners. I have so many detransitioner friends now. They really speak and talk to me because I care about them. And they say, well, the number one thing that was missing was mental health. Nobody told them not to do it. Nobody. I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm actually kind of, that's the missing link. That's the missing link.
Yeah. And why do you think, or what is your supposition of why certain parts of the trans community don't want that discussion to be had? Do you have any guesses as to why?
Yeah, I do. Because it makes us look bad. And then people will start to question transitioning, and people will start to, which I want them to do. Don't you want people to question transitioning? This is not I'm gay and tomorrow I'm bisexual and that's a whole other space. This is I'm going to cut my breasts off and then what's going to happen to me next? And a hysterectomy at 17 and 18. Come on, man. Like, let's just be real about this. And people hate me. People hate me in my community because I have these conversations. Because if we don't have – to me, if we don't have them, it's not caring about the community. It's like saying we have a dirty little secret and we're not going to talk about this. And who cares? Collateral damage. Detransitioners are collateral damage.
There's a theme that's arising of you being – in a group and then not in a group anymore.
It's so good. I fucking live for this stuff.
Okay, what's up with that?
Hell if I know, dude. Everybody always has an opinion about me forever, dude. Since I started my work, everything, everyone, this community has been after me for years because I've just been me and I just say and I do things and I created sex toys and I create, you know, this and that and I talk about my body and I'm very comfortable with who I am. And, you know, sometimes people don't like success. So I don't really know what camp I'm in today or where I stand. I'm pretty straightforward in my thoughts. I think so. I hope that you understand that or if you've read my stuff. I'm pretty straightforward. I never veer. I've always been on that track. I've always said, this is this. I'm a transsexual. I don't know what's going on here. What you people are doing over there on TikTok with blue hair and like now you're trans. Like, this is not where I come from. That's a whole other weird space of stuff.
Okay. So what do you think is your work right now then?
Yeah, I really do feel I've actually pulled out of activism because that's not real. Activism where I come from, again, 58, I grew up in the AIDS epidemic. All my friends died of AIDS. I was with ACT UP Queer Nation. I've been an activist in the LGBT community for 30 plus years. I have, my heart is in activism. That said, today activism is not activism. It's something else. It's fascist weird stuff where if you don't believe this, that's not activism. Activism is creating bridges. So today, in a space, I'm a bridge builder. That's really what I tell people. I'm a human rights activist. I'm a bridge builder. I don't want you to force myself on you. If you don't like the way I am, good for you. Right on, my friend. I'll just go that way, you go that way. That's how you make the world a better space. So I have to teach my community and the ones who listen to me that we need to reach out to these people. Don't roll over J.K. Rowling because she said trans. She did not say anything transphobic. Nothing. She said, I have feelings. And these are the things I just cannot be a part of a group of people who don't listen, who are angry, who are mean. If you don't take on this thought process, that's not trans. That is not. That is something else. And so today I speak out against these people who are on some level destroying a community I was part of building.
Okay. There seems to be, from your perspective and other perspectives that I've listened to, kind of a tradition within the gay community of activism. Do you think that that's something that tied that community together, and if and how that's changed over time with, you know, the successive progress through that activism, and how that has changed the community?
Well, it's divided our community for sure. Somehow the T has just overpowered the LGB, and I don't know how that's happened. I mean, I have thoughts, but I'll sound like a crazy person if I tell you, but I'm not going to go there. That said, how did the T get so powerful? So the activism today isn't the same. I feel the T is overpowering the voices of the other, and actually sort of on some level being very, very disrespectful. Very disrespectful in language and thought and feelings and listening to the other pieces of the puzzle.
Okay. And so how do you think that that might change then? Just that modality of communication?
How it's going to change is what I said earlier. Sitting down together and listening to each other and understanding, because I feel this way. It's not against you. It's the way I feel. And the LGBT has always been very strong together. I'm telling you, I've been in this community. This is the first time in the history of our LGBT community that I've ever seen the insanity going on. Never have I seen it at this. You know, the gay women helped the gay men during AIDS. We came. I was a gay woman at that time. We came and we helped. We were brothers and sisters. I miss that. This is not what's happening. And I understand now why LGB wants to literally, I sound like I'm teaching a kindergarten class, wants to get rid of the T.
There is a children's book in there. It probably will either do very, very well or very not well.
Right on, my friend.
So when did you decide to speak to this, or what was the wake-up call to the runaway train?
You know, it was before Rowling, I'll tell you that. But at the same time, that was really a real wake-up call for me. When I saw people, I mean, I was already interjecting my voice into women's. I'm a feminist, dude. I used to be a lady. I know what it's like to be a lady, and no one can ever take that away from me. I embrace my horrible part of my life. It was horrible living as a woman. I am very connected to that, and that's why nobody, these people better get out of my way, because you cannot come and invade spaces that are already still trying to fill. 30 years ago we were in this same space. And so I know a lot of people in the trans community who don't necessarily want to interject their voice and take over women's spaces, but there's a powerful part of this community that says we're lesbians and we're this. No one's saying you're not a lesbian. You can be that. But let's figure out how we can interject. So I saw this attack on gay women, this attack on women, shutting women's voices down. I'm like, this is misogyny at its finest. You used to be men. You are women now. How are you not understanding that? So I really – and the biology debate. That was it for me, dude. I was okay, this is insane. We are losing out on everything. Okay. Kids will get hurt.
Okay. Okay, could you outline then that for the audience? Like, what is that biology thing, and how did it change?
So out of nowhere, people just started saying biology doesn't exist, and I really do think that came from the academic world. And by the way, I love your evergreen stuff, man. That's how I connected to you. It's so brilliant. I learned so much from you, man. I'm not an academic, clearly. I didn't even graduate high school. So I'm just like, this is such good shit. But it – teaching these kids these languages and these things is okay. Just so I see this idea that biology doesn't exist coming from the space, and then people just latching onto it because it's a means and a way to sort of manipulate a space. That's what I see. So yeah.
And where did you first hear that then? Was it
I can't remember. I started seeing it on Twitter and I'm like, what? I literally was like, wait a minute. Am I reading this correctly? Is this actually real? This dumbass dude who didn't graduate high school knows biology is actually real. And then I started connecting. Deborah So reached out to me, Dr. Deborah, who's a really awesome lady. And some people started reaching out to me, and Abigail Shear, and, you know, all these people. And I started having that biology talk with them, and they were like fearful. And I'm like, and so anyway, yeah, that's kind of where it came from.
Why do you think that? Why were they fearful?
Well, because, again, once you start trying to take biology out of the question, everything is going to fall. Everything. Okay. The structure is going to fall. Everything. The reason we're trans people is biology. I mean, how dare you disrespect my space? I'm here only because I was born female and I had to fix it. And that's a real fucking story. It's not made up crazy stuff.
Yeah. So when you decided to speak out, what was your tact and how did that work?
Well, I just said biology. First thing I remembered, the first thing I said was, biology is real. We cannot do this. It is actually detrimental to the health of trans people. And I got nailed. Oh, my God. They all came at me. You're a transphobe. You're a TERF. I'm like, well, wait a minute. TERF isn't even part of this conversation. And I started getting nailed with. And I'm like, oh, I'm not that dude. I'm that guy that fights. If you don't know, I'm the fighter dude. I'm an Irish background. Like, really? So I was like, okay, we'll see about. So that really sparked me. It did. It lit a fire under me. And I was like, this is not okay.
And has there been coalition building since then, or do you see groups forming?
Yeah, Scott, who you had on your podcast, Scott Scott is building a trans rational voices. He's such a beautiful guy. So there is me and him are not the only ones like us. There's a lot of us, and we're coming to it, and we're tired of it. And I also want to let you know that we're not putting up with this. We care about kids. We all have kids, a lot of us. The good thing is, that's the thing is, I'm not just talking out of my ass. I also have a kid. I have an 8-year-old boy. And let me tell you, biology is real. I watch this kid. He's a little dude. There's no daddy, I want to wear a dress, which is fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm just saying he's never even gone to that space ever. Yeah. So I know that this is a real thing. So we're building forces. And I think the situation is, you know, like I said earlier, I'm a transsexual man. I'm not a transgender man. This is not my identity. I had a sex change, which a lot of the guys like me are like me. We literally wanted to transition to men and live in the world. So you just see us as dudes. And now they're making a lot of problems for us. And, you know, don't do that. Find your own space in this community and deal with your own stuff. But don't roll over us, because we're not going to sit down and take it.
Yeah. How have you seen that the science with regards to, or the treatment of trans men, how has that developed? And you think it's doing good?
Nope, not at all. And let me tell you again, 25 years ago, I'm a guinea pig. Within 10 years of long-term use of, they don't have any studies still today. I've been screaming this at the top of my lungs. I got atrophy. Long story short, I almost died because it literally tore apart my system and it closed everything up. And I got septic. And I have, you know, it was the first, I'm the first recorded case of long-term use of testosterone on a female body. That's why we have to talk about our biology. I'm a female bodied person. If I go to a doctor and say I'm just a dude, but I don't know where my testicles are, like, the doctor's going to be like, what's happening? We have to be so open about our biology.
Okay. And you don't see enough research still?
None. Very few. I've been talking about it. These kids are all literally, I'm not kidding you, my friend Benjamin. I get emails from kids daily. I have cramps, Grandpa. I have these cramps. I don't know what they are. My doctor doesn't know what they are. I'm like, it's atrophy. I built a website with a pamphlet on it. Go download it. Take it to your fucking doctor. And this is what's happening. Do you know that I had to do that? I had to do that because nobody in this medical field cares. I'm telling you, money, my friend. It's money. Yep.
And is that do you see the care different between trans women and trans men? Is it better for trans women?
Well, I think there's probably, I can't really speak on that because I haven't really, other than that, I know that trans women have been around a lot longer, but I think we are at the, us trans people are the ones who need to change the system, and we will not change the system the way we're doing it now. And we need to talk to doctors, and we need to let them have understanding of what's going on. And we're not doing that because there's this mantra in the community that we don't need to educate you. You need to educate yourself, which is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. How are you going to educate yourself? You don't, if we're not giving you any education.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ignorance.
So it seems like what needs to happen in the community at large is more conversations. And
yep.
And then what about the industry, the medical industry? What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, I hate them, just so you know, and I'm putting it out there. Why do I hate them? Because they never, ever talk about trans male health at a lot of these conferences. They don't bring the right doctors in. I have created a whole space of how to talk about my – I always try to apply to talk to these doctors. Nope, they don't want – who comes? Pharmaceutical company, you know, I don't even need to tell you, my friend. That's why I'm like, oh, wait a minute. They're turning this into an industry. Okay. It's an industry. So if you don't want the man who's been around for a long time, who has a lot of information for you, doctors, and you don't care about me, that says to me, wait a minute here, something else is going on. So I don't see us moving. I see us becoming a factory for not even therapy. That doesn't mean that's not even on the table. For medical, for testosterone, for surgery. Surgeries, there are lines 2 years long to get surgery, my friend. That is not okay. That's weird.
Okay. So how do you speak to, let's say, a teenager who was in the same space that you are describing about, I'm going to kill myself if I don't go down this
path. Right.
And
that's
how do they know that this is the path for them if they are being pushed by that feeling of imminent death and destruction?
Yeah, therapy. And I say it all the time. That's the first thing kids, when they say to me, Trampa, I want to transition. Can you tell me? I'm like, nope, I can't tell you anything. I'm going to give you a list of therapists. Tell me what state you live in. That's the first thing you're going to do. I'm telling you, that is exactly what I say to every single kid that reaches out to me. I don't care what you do. If you don't get into therapy, you have to talk to a professional. Kids are influenced, man. We don't need to say kids are influenced from YouTube, TikTok. They're being influenced. I'm going to scream it at the top of my lungs. What is wrong with everybody? It is easy to influence. I have an 8-year-old. I can watch how you're influenced by just putting stuff in front of their face daily. Yeah. They're influenced. They want it. I want it. You know? And so that's the dangerous part. I don't think we are bringing mental health care into it enough. Okay. And that's weird. Don't you think that's weird?
Well, furthermore, mental health care is complicated because of the term conversion therapy. What do you think about that?
Oh, my God. How is that conversion therapy? That's saving a life. I call it safekeeping. They try to call mental health care gatekeeping. It's safekeeping. Okay. The only reason I am here, my friend, is because of my therapist. My therapist led me through it. My therapist made sure it was the right choice. My therapist made sure that I wasn't just jumping on it and it was going to be the last. It's not the last resort. There are a lot of other things you can do before you take that situation. Well, I guess that is the last resort, but it's not the thing you need to do in order to make that change. You got to work on this and figure out what's going on with yourself. I worked on my brain for a long time.
Yeah. And how do you know which therapist do you have any like kind of general clues as if this therapist is asking the right questions or?
Yeah, good. That's a great point, my friend. Because we're not training therapists. We actually are not making an effort to really bring in gender, dysphoria therapists or therapists who are versed on trans kids. Why are we not doing that? Because guess what? We don't have any information. It's so new. I mean, this just started happening in the last 5 years. It's new. We don't have Nobody will let us do studies. The trans community, every time a study is made, Lisa Littman, like every single time she tries to do a study, they try to rip it right out of her hands. Why is that? Why do you not want studies to our – I want studies. I want so many studies. And so that says again to me, uh-oh, there we go. Don't talk about us. Let's just it's weird. It's just not – it's not healthy.
Yeah. So so you guys are, I guess, forming a group to speak about this. And
yeah, we have to. We have to as elders. I'm an elder. So is he. And we've gone through it all. He's had horrible surgeries, that poor guy. My God. Like, he has a voice. He has a story. I have a story. We almost died. Like, we're sitting here going, we don't want – we don't not want kids to transition. Of course we do. But we want you to make sure that you are safe and that you get into the same space we are in, which we are such powerhouses in the world. I have nothing to complain about, my friend. I have an amazing life because I live the life I've always wanted. Are these kids doing the same? Are they just seeing that something could, you know, help them if they take their boobs off? They're not understanding the depth of it.
So, do you have hope, or is there just a lot of work to do?
I'm laughing because I don't want to cry, dude. Yeah, I do, because people are starting to care, and I have to tell you that people are starting to hear me, and outside of my community, I don't speak to my community. That's, like, ridiculous. I don't need to speak to the choir. I travel the world and speak all over the world to all kinds of groups and people about my transition, and I've built a lot of bridges, so I know that people on the outside world listen to us. It's not true what the trans community says. A lot of people hear us. A lot of people want us to be safe. I mean, I've amassed a lot of female followers who really respect my voice and really understand. I don't deny my female biology. I never will. And that's what we need to understand as trans people. Once we start denying our biology, we start denying why we are here. We are not making a bridge, and we are not letting people understand our pain and why we need to do this. And that is really where I see the next level is. I think people are going to start to understand we need to stop what's happening, and we need to stop transitioning kids at such an early age.
Okay. And you don't think that it's a contradiction between what you call safekeeping and, I guess, transphobia? You don't see that there's competing values there?
Well, how is there? Yeah, because I believe that mental health care is not. Are you saying that mental health care is transphobic?
Well, that's the question, because that is kind of the accusation that's being made about this is transphobic. If you don't follow, this is transphobic. So,
but dude, everything is transphobic. So it doesn't really matter. Today, anything you do is transphobic. I'm even a transphobe. Did you know that? I'm a transphobe and a TERF and all that nonsense. Don't even take that to – that doesn't count anymore. Just so you know, that word has zero – weight to it, zero, because everything is transphobic. And I warn those guys, stop calling everything transphobic, because now you've, you know, cried wolf too many times and people don't give a shit anymore.
So is there actual transphobia, and how have you dealt with that?
Okay. Yes, 100% there is. When I started in the adult entertainment world, I had tons of transphobia. Are you kidding me? People hated me. People wanted to kill me. I have stacks upon stacks of emails. I'm going to kill you. You're the freak. I mean, God, dude, people just went nuts on me on such a. So, yeah, of course there's transphobia. Okay. There still is today. People who don't want to hear us, people who say that's weird and God didn't make you that way, that on some level is transphobia.
And how have you dealt with that? What's your recommendation?
I laugh. You know, I'm that guy. I'm so confident. I'm so confident. It's kind of weird, to be honest with you. The man with the vagina is so confident. But it's because I really attribute it to laughing at myself, because it is kind of funny. A man with a vagina running around the world. And I really listen to people. I listen to feelings. I listen to why people wouldn't want to, you know, accept me. There's a lot of people who don't accept me, and that's okay. It doesn't mean anything. You got to find your space in the world. It's like, you think everyone likes you, then that's a narcissistic point of view. Like, no way. No way will everybody like me, man. No way. Nobody will everybody like you, and no way will everybody like anybody in this world.
Yeah. So it seems like there's just very basic things that need to happen. Conversation, humility, curiosity. I guess building bridges, I think, is something that you put in there that is very core to positive as opposed to destructive activism.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate you saying that. It means so much to me. I don't care if you like what I did. I don't care if you accept me as a man. It doesn't matter. If you want to call me a lady, you go right ahead. It means nothing to me. This is where I want us to be. We cannot be so sensitive in the trans community that we have become a cult-like space where we're just, you have to accept us, and if you don't. And if you look, it's mostly trans women, and I'm actually really shocked at that. I really am, because the trans women I know are not that way. They've never been that way. They understand, you know, and to be honest with you, I do think it's a harder space to walk in as a trans woman than a trans man. It's a whole other space. It's different. You seem to be more visible on some level, right? right? And then what I mean by that is appearance. So it's definitely a much more difficult medical transition on some level than it is for a trans man. But that said, again, these women are also socialized as men. So they also come to a space with all, there's layers there. But that, but if we don't have conversation is everything, dialogue, understanding our feelings. When they went over JK with a roller, like they literally stomped her, and half of my friends were on board with it. I was shocked. I was like, wait a minute, did any of you people read what she wrote? She never. She said, I have trans friends. What more can she say? So I'm like, this is, no, we're not listening. We are not listening. It's basically you are with us or you're not. And that's a whole something else. I don't know what that is.
And you're not on board with that?
Nope, not at all. Nope.
And why not?
You don't have to agree with me. Why not? Because that's not the real world. Again, I'm going to go back to, I'm very successful. I'm successful in my businesses, my life. People have not liked me forever. I stood alone in this world for a long time. This trans community thing is new. It's in the 15 or so years, I stood alone in the world, walked the world naked. You can see naked pictures of me everywhere. And I stood my ground. And that's what I'm saying. So don't tell me I don't know. I did it without any of that community. Okay. And today, people respect my voice. So yeah, it doesn't, we don't have to steamroll people, and we have to realize that the reality is people aren't going to like us, and so what?
Okay. All right. So what's next then?
I think what's next is that I keep speaking out, and that I keep getting asked to speak on shows like yours, and that I keep saying that I want to build a bridge, and I keep saying that that's not the community I come from, and I keep speaking my truth, because I don't want to be a part of that. And I think somehow we need to start. It's my responsibility, my friend, as an elder and as a person who cares about the future of this community. It is my responsibility. And that's what I saw. I got to step up, or I feel like I'm not doing what I should be doing.
And have you, I guess you mentioned that kids are emailing you. So have you been attracting
people to help?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then women, every day, my friend, every day, women just send me thank yous. It's really, they're like, we're so scared for our space. We really appreciate your voice. And I'm like, wow. Like, you know, you don't have to do that. I'm doing this because I want to do it, and not because I feel on any level like I'm pushed into it. But, you know, I just really want people to understand not all trans people are like that. They're just not. And that's the face of trans now. And that scares me.
Okay.
I don't want parents to think, oh, my God, is my child going to grow up to be like that? Because they are. I want parents to see me and Scott and other people who are really grounded around our stuff.
Just to unpack that a little bit. Were you saying that the behavior of the trans rights community is now attaching itself to transness, and so parents and the community at large are seeing, if my kid is trans, that means they're going to control everything I say and steamroll their children.
And steamroll my parents. You know, oh, my God, parents, too. Parents write me daily. Oh, my God, my kid thinks they're trans. They never felt trans before. All of a sudden, I'm like, it's TikTok. It's YouTube. Mm. I totally tell them that. I'm like, try to get them off the internet for a little while and get them back into actual socializing. Okay. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says. I'm telling you, it's influence. There is no other way this is happening other than influenced by media and other things. Kids, when I was a young kid, punk rock, I was a punk rocker, dude, because I needed to find that space that I felt uncomfortable in. Of course, these kids are all going through puberty. They feel uncomfortable. They're looking for a space to be in. And trans is now an identity. Where I come from, it was not an identity. It was a means and a way to actually make myself be a man and fit into the world. It's not an identity. I'm not a trans person.
Okay. You are a man, then. I guess you're yourself, and then there's the way that people see you.
I'm a transsexual man, 100%. Okay. But I live my life as a man. So when my IDs are male, everything, I walk the world, wherever I go, I'm a man. It's not, you know, my ID doesn't say transgender.
And when you were going through the process of becoming a man through medical means, was there a moment where you stopped thinking about that? Was there a moment where it was behind you, that the dysphoria? And what was that like?
It was well, so I still have a vagina, and I didn't get what we call bottom surgery, because back in the day, it just wasn't what I want. You know, I'm a perfectionist on some level, and I wanted a working penis.
Okay.
I want to have sex. I want to do pee through. I want to do all the things every guy does. Wasn't happening. So I chose not to have that surgery. Very difficult. Very, very difficult. Because as you know, penis makes the man. And I'm just like, wow, what do I do? So I really had to push through that. That was, okay. I think, the hardest part of my transition was And once I pushed through that and I just had to really understand that I'm just this guy and that's the way it is. And okay. that was really enlightening for me. And so, yeah, okay. I had to find my space in the world.
Okay. So it seems like shifting beyond the transsexual conversation, it seems, and this is why the stories and having these conversations is so important to me. It's because it's about personal empowerment and personal resilience. And at root, this journey really forces people to be honest with themselves and
That's
their
right.
role in the world. And the detrans, whether it's a trans person or a detrans person, there's always this, chasing after authenticity that is in there. There's also a lot of narcissism too, because it is, you can get caught up in what do people think about me, and having your idea of self depends so much on what is outside of you. And are there any tips that you have about coming into your own for young people or people who are struggling with self-confidence?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. That's such a great question, my friend. You know, self-confidence comes from really, it sounds so cheesy, self-love. And it really does. It comes from finally understanding you don't have to worry what people think about you. I'm not going to lie. It's not an easy space to get to. And you got to be willing to do the work. But that work entails you knowing what you want. What do I want? I want to grow a beard. I want to look like a man. I want to have tattoos. I actually sculpted the body and the space I wanted to be in without worrying what other people think. You think people hate, my parents hate the way I look. They're just like, you look like a crazy dude out of prison. I'm like, awesome. I'm just kidding. And they're like, so you know what I mean? You're not going to be. So kids out there, people who are looking for a space to get to that confidence level, you got to know what that means to you. I can't answer that. What does that mean, confidence, to you? How do you? So I found it because I built the space I needed to be in and how I walk the world, and people see me how I always wanted them to see me.
Okay. This might be too personal to ask, but were you able to kind of make amends with your family? And
oh yeah, dude. Yeah. I have the most amazing. They disowned me back in the day, which I don't blame them. Of course they had to. I was a mess.
Okay, so they didn't disown you because of your gender or the problems on that. It was something else then.
Alcohol, drugs, just loss, not knowing how to do things. And I didn't even know it was my gender. I had no idea. Yeah. So now I'm this man who walks the world. My parents are very proud of me. They said to me the other day, they said, wow, we thought either you were going to be dead or you were just going to be, doing nothing and homeless. And, because I didn't graduate school and I was very much that black sheep of the family. So today I have a beautiful, amazing relationship. And again, kids, I built that. I went to my parents. They didn't come to me. I went back to them, and I made an effort every day. I would show up, and they would call me she, and they would call me the girl name, and I'd be like, no, look at me, until finally I'm their son. So you got to participate in any relationship that you want. You got to participate.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to ask, because it seems like one aspect of the current kind of current within the trans community is that it's okay to just disown your family if they don't see you as who you are. And that can be really dangerous, because that's a way of a cult. That's one way that a cult works. Oh, so
excellent.
So you're just want to ask, how did you get back into that relationship, and what did you have to change about yourself? And accepting yourself, how did accepting yourself empower your parents' acceptance of you?
Because they see me as such a success. I mean, you know what I mean? They're like, I'm flying to Singapore tomorrow, Mom. She's like, wow. I'm like, I'm flying to Malaysia. I'm like, my parents are like, what? Who are you? But again, I show up. I show up. I make an effort. My parents don't. I'm their daughter. They lost their daughter.
Yeah.
That is not a joke. It makes me actually want to cry, because these kids don't understand. And I know I just want to shake them. Like, wake up. In 20 years, you're going to be so mad at yourself the way you are acting to your parents right now. They don't understand. You're their daughter. They're losing you. They don't have any information. They have people like me. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I only know this. So you've got to have compassion for your parents and your journey. And they're being taught to disconnect from their parents, what you said. And that is cult-like, and I hate it.
Okay. This is pretty powerful language you said, but the parents are watching their daughter die. And in a way, did you have to kind of help them through their mourning for that? Mm-hmm. And what was that like?
It was difficult because I didn't know what to do. Now I'm older and I'm much, much more understanding of a lot of what's happening. But, you know, this was 20 plus years ago. And so as I moved myself back in, and I didn't necessarily look so masculine, you know, I little by little started looking more masculine. And that you could see the daughter change into the son, if that makes sense. You can literally watch somebody transition into that other person. And so I'm transitioning into more masculinity, and my parents are they're just like, what? They don't get it. My parents are 80. They're just like, what's happening here? And so eventually I just said, let's talk. And then they said, we feel really sad because we lost you as, you know, Laura. And now, you know, being Buck is this thing that we don't necessarily understand. And I'm like, I know. That's why I'm here. See, I'm going to cry because they literally connected to me and they said to me why they were sad. That's why I know they are losing their daughter and they don't know what that means, a son. They don't understand what that means until you start participating. So kids out there, they're losing their daughter. Be compassionate for that.
Okay. And how was that for you to hear that? And I can see that almost like an expectation for you to not transition and a resistance on you. And how did you separate maybe even feelings of anger for them not accepting from the compassion for them?
Yeah, therapy. So as I was seeing my parents, and actually we went to a couple therapy sessions, but my dad's like super old school, like ex-football player, like that kind of dude, right? No feelings. Try getting him into therapy. that lasted two sessions. But that said, we went and, you know, we talked about it. Again, even without a therapist, with that, you got to have dialogue. You got to listen to people. You got to listen to feelings. You got to listen to why people are against us. You got to understand that they do. If someone doesn't have gender dysphoria, how do they even understand it? Especially parents. How do they understand it? You're not. I barely even understand my gender dysphoria. So how is a parent going to know this? And it's like, it's just such a difficult space we're in because we don't have a lot of dialogue with parents and we don't have a lot of information for parents. Can you imagine if your child today said to you, Mom or Dad, I'm trans. What do you do? Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the reason why I keep on asking these interviews to like figure this out, you know.
You're a hero for us, my friend. You really we like you because you hear us and you're willing to spread the information. We don't want people to be fearful of transitioning your child. We want people to do it the right way. We want people to understand there are some kids who are that way, and there's some kids who are latching onto a message or something because there's more internalized stuff that they're not dealing with.
Okay. Yeah. So I just thank you for opening up to me. These are very sensitive issues and you're being very vulnerable to really get into that. But that's the stuff that young people and parents really need to hear because we are dealing with death in a way. We're dealing with a transformation, and that really does include the loss of something, and navigating that loss we have to be honest about that. We can't rush that. Because that'll hobble the relationship, and it'll hobble the individual that's going through that transformation if you can't be honest with what you're losing too.
And why can't you? That's the thing, is why is my community continually shutting down conversation, shutting down studies, and all of these things is because people care. Do you think people would write books about this if they didn't care? If people just didn't give a shit, they'd be like, let those kids change. Who cares? They're all a bunch of freaks anyway. That's what would be happening. People outside of our community, Abigail, Deborah, are literally writing books so that people can be informed of this and that we can actually make it a better structure. That's not what this community thinks. They think everybody's against us, everybody. And that I'm here to tell you, it's not true. It is not true.
Okay. So it seems that your stance is more healthy in the long run and will actually be better for your community and the community at large. But just to sum it up, to try to sum it up is that you're not at war. This is not a war for, you're not trying to smash the binary or defeat the cis or, you know, force acceptance on people.
Oh God, it's so horrible. It's horrible. That's cult. I'm going to tell you again, it's a cult. Okay. That's cult. My ex-girlfriend was in a cult. I know a lot about it. And so that's such, oh my God, dude, you know that. It's just so it's just there. And okay. So, no, I'm not going to let it happen. I'm here to tell you that I'm not going to let that happen. I'll fight against it as much as possible. And I believe in dialogue and being on you on your show and letting me actually educate. I want to educate you so that you have the information to understand what does this all mean, because you're not being educated. You're just being shamed. You're just being scolded. You're just being called names. And that is weird and wrong. Yeah.
Well, so you, I guess it's time of COVID, so I want to know what you guys, what you're up to, but what are you up to?
Dude, it's like... I also have a cannabis. I am sober from drugs and alcohol, but I also use cannabis as a medication. And so I'm now in the cannabis business, and I created the first LGBT focused trans owned company. And so I just opened in Palm Springs. So that's keeping me really busy because I'm just really pushing, creating jobs. I only hire within my community, and I really try to make an effort to really give back to my community and create a space that we can, you know, have. It's hard to get jobs. Trans people have a hard time, you know, especially when you're in that transitional period or your ID says female, but you look like a man. These are things you would never even know that are really detrimental to also mental health.
Yeah.
Really, when you walk into a place and someone calls you she, it does hurt your feelings, even though you look like a she. So, you know, these are things. So I'm just working on that, building, you know, building more businesses and building places that I can hire within my community and create space so they can learn to create their own jobs and stop whining about everything.
Yeah. Okay. So it seems like there's this really interesting territory of walking into transition or going through the process of transition because you have to, it seems like, and I'm just talking generally, you always have to figure out how I behave is more important than how other people behave. And I can put so much pressure on my community to accept me, but I can't, there's this line where I'm demanding too much from other people.
That's right.
How do you navigate that? Especially when
kids are being taught narcissism. They're being taught ego. They're being taught me, 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 me. And it's all about me, 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 me. And that is the most dangerous space you could ever be in, is me, 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 me. And so I'm trying to teach you. Why? Because you only focus on you and you don't care about other things or how I am affecting other people.
Why is it healthy to be aware of yourself beyond yourself?
Because you have an effect on people. So if, let's say, I'm just running around saying, fuck you, I'm trans, if you don't like it, fuck off. How is that affecting other people? It's making people go, trans people are weird. But, you know, so you're actually, and that's what's happening. That is exactly what's happening. They're like, if you don't accept me, you're a transphobe. That's like the mantra of the day. Like, no, that's not the way it works. What are you doing? What are you actually doing to make people be a transphobe to you? So it's a very difficult space to be in, inner depth, looking at what you do to participate in this particular situation. Okay. And that's a very a mature space to be in, and we're dealing with a lot of immaturity. And so how do we get people to be more mature, I think, is really the question, because we become a bunch of little babies. And I don't come from that space, dude. I told you, I grew balls. I had to grow balls in order to walk the world. You got to have balls to walk this world. People will nail you every day, every day. So that's real. I'm not talking about any, you get nailed, we all get nailed. It's just that. So you have to understand that. And we're teaching these kids that you can't, what we're teaching the youth today is that people aren't allowed to dislike you. People aren't allowed to have a different opinion. People aren't allowed to say whatever they say because it's hurting your feelings or you're triggered or you're all this really crazy language. Mm-hmm. What are we creating? A bunch of babies and a bunch of really self-entitled stuff.
Yeah. And that goes way outside just the trans topic. Yep. It's the entire culture. From the top to the bottom, it's all a bunch of babies.
Dude. Wow, you are so deep in it, too. It's so awesome. One day we're going to have a beer, and you're going to be like, this is like, I can't believe we made it through. We're going to make it through. You know that. It's going to change. Okay. I highly believe that.
And on that note, what do you think is a way for it to change that is least destructive to everybody involved? What are some of the core principles?
Oh, yeah. Great. Okay, dialogue. I'm big on that. You got to talk to people with opposing opinions. I don't understand. I grew up like that. I just don't understand this idea that you can't have a conversation because somebody has a different thought process than you. It's how we get to the next level. It's how we've always got to the next level. I mean, don't they teach that in university?
It doesn't seem like they do.
I just think it's hilarious. I'm not sending my kid to university. I'm telling you.
Well, I guess you're getting your practice at homeschooling right now, so you're just going to take it all the way to a master's degree.
Seriously, a master's degree in trampa school. It's going to be different, let me tell you. Bottom line, dude, conversation. If we don't start to understand that people have opposing views to us, they might not understand us. And again, that's not just the trans community. I see all the other nonsense out there from the youth and, you know, this idea that everybody's racist and everybody's against us. And if you don't get on board with this language or that, then you're this and that. Like, really? We live in the United States of America. Seriously, we do. People forgot where we live. We are also allowed to have opposing opinions, whether you like it or not. And we're allowed to have and vote for whoever we want. And we're allowed, just because you're a trans person doesn't mean you can't be a Republican. That's nonsense. I mean, I don't understand. I don't agree with that, but you can. And it doesn't mean you're not my friend. So, you know, that's where we need to get back to, which we used to do, and we used to have opinions, and we used to, but I see people getting sick of it, and I see new platforms being created, and I see people, I think it's going to come back around.
So ultimately, you trust in, I guess, the human spirit to adapt beyond it and get bored of cultiness.
I do. There's no way that, you know, there's no way that we can't continue logically to let this happen. There's too much stuff being said that's so illogical and so out there that people are like, huh? they fucked up by bringing in biology. That, you know, they could have maybe made this go a little further. Once they played the biology card, done. Yeah. That was it. Everyone was over it at that point. So before that, you know, the turfy stuff and changing language. I mean, I can't believe the corporations just all got on board with this nonsense. It's shocking. Honestly, as a trans person, I'm like, how did they do this? How did they twist the way people are so scared and they fire people at left and right because they said something that hurt a trans person's feelings? It's it's really, I mean, really, I don't know. It's shocking, but it's going to go away.
What are some resources that you want to plug?
So number one, what I want to plug is FTMHealth.com. Okay. That is the number one website for any information. And I'm adding there daily. I have a bunch of kids helping me. What I did is I built it. And then what I got kids to do community, because I'm big on community service. I think it really helps people understand, you know, being part of and participating and not just wanting. Because, you know, kids, everyone wants. This is the new generation. GoFundMe, PayPal, Venmo. Yeah. I'm like, really, dude? Are you kidding? So, yeah, I'm totally against that. They do that for their top surgeries. They do. I said, no, you got to work. So let's get you on this. So FTM Health is really a website where I'm building to create resources that you need in order to go to the gynecologist or things that are very hard to talk about as men. So it helps us understand our health. And that's really the one I want to plug. Because it's important to me. Health is important to me. I mean, I wouldn't be here at 58. I'm a healthy 58-year-old guy. And, you know, that comes from taking care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one of the dicey things about changing language is it might diminish health in the doctor's office if you can't communicate different things. And then having the doctors always being afraid of that. And then, like, malpractice either way for them. Like, it's an impossible decision.
I mean, it's just phenomenal how they're digging a hole for us. I work so hard to create health out there. I created products. I created a lubrication for trans men so we could actually talk about it. It gets into gynecological offices. When you walk in, you see T-Lube by Buck Angel. Then you know. You know, they're actually versed on trans health. It was I thought about ways to do it subtly where it's not like just kind of – it's embarrassing for us to go to the gynecologist. Could you imagine if you had to go to the – waiting in the room with all the ladies is uncomfortable. Okay, they look at you like you're insane. So really, we need to have – that's why we have to keep biology on the table. When you say trans women are women, go fuck yourself. Trans women are trans women. And they have a different biology than biological women. And so it's very detrimental to our health. And that's why I get upset about this idea that we're men and we're women. No, we're not. We're actually trans men and trans women.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really do think that, I mean, any form of bigotry is really solved by your stance, your attitude, the maturity, dialogue.
Yes. Yes.
Perhaps laughter is just like a core human value.
People lost the ability to everyone's scared to laugh because if they laugh, they might be laughing at the wrong thing. And then there's a TERF and a transphobe. I'm telling you, those TERF and transphobe, I'm getting that shit taken out. I cannot handle it anymore. I cannot stand. Those words are now hate speech, and I cannot stand it. I hate it.
Because why? What do they do to the discourse?
What they do is they create a space where now there's no more discourse because you have been called a transphobe and a TERF, and you just immediately shut down the conversation. Nobody wants to be called a name. It's like, you're an asshole. Okay, well, now you just shut down the conversation with me. No, I'm not an asshole. I'm just a guy who has a different opinion. You're a TERF. What does that do? Immediately, you're pointing fingers and you're shutting down the conversation. When you say, well, excuse me, my friend, that's a little bit of a transphobic statement. Let me explain it to you this way, which I do every day. I take the time to actually say, that's not cool, blah, blah, blah. And then people are always like, well, God, Buck, thank you. Nobody took the time to tell me that. I'm like, now it's my job to do this. And it's like on top of everything else. Like, really? Come on, man. I'm old. I want to retire.
That's the first dishonest thing you've said all interview. I think you run towards activity. I think you see projects and you just take them up.
I'm that guy. You know why? I think because I was told I was a dummy my whole life. And I think,
really?
Graduate high school. Oh, God. My whole life. I did horrible in school. Pretty much every report card was D's and F's. I'm not even kidding. And I'm like, you're never going to make it in this world, dude. You're going to be a trash man for the rest of your life. Not to shame trash man.
No, but you've completely beat everybody's expectations.
Right on, my friend. And that's really why I talk about that, because, you know, there's kids out there who feel the same. And when you're not participating in school, there's a reason why you're not. There was a reason why I wasn't participating. I didn't feel comfortable being there. And so I couldn't learn if all I kept thinking about was, I'm a man and if people see me as a girl, you're literally shut down. So you got to look at why kids aren't doing well in school. It could be so many different things happening there. It's not that they're stupid. It's that they're not participating for some kind of reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, Buck, this is probably one of my favorite episodes in this entire journey. Thank you for shedding your energy to me and my audience.
Right on. No, I love you, my friend. Thank you for your work, and thank you for really just paying attention to the world and what's going on. The information you're putting out there is so important, and it actually on some level really connects to what I'm talking about, and I do see a lot of parallels, and that's why I really appreciate what you do. It means a lot to me, so thank you.
So I will link all the links in the description for people to find all your work.
Excellent. Thank you, my friend.
And we'll keep in touch.
Yeah, let's do that. Awesome, okay. For sure. So let me know when you
maybe have a round table at some point, or a beer, or a barbecue.
Yeah, right on. Where do you live?
I'm in Olympia.
You're in Olympia. I'm sorry. Just kidding.
Well, I'm outside of Olympia. I actually live in Olympia.
Just kidding. I'm messing with you.
No, you're not wrong.
Okay. Have a beautiful day, my friend, and we'll stay in
touch.
You
too. Okay.
Bye.
Congratulations for reaching the end of the podcast. If you enjoyed this product, consider donating to this channel via paypal.me/BenjaminBoyce or joining me on Patreon. Also follow me on Twitter @BenjaminABoyce. Have a good night.